Halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Hockey Hall of Fame journalist Al Strachan. Al joins us to talk about the life and times, the legacy of Mr. Hockey Gordie Howe. Al, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Well, my pleasure. I'd rather be doing it under different circumstances, but glad to help out.
Of course, Al. You and us, too, would rather be doing this under different circumstances. You know, Al, you're the author of a book called 99 Gretzky, His Game, His Story. And the ties between Wayne Gretzky and Gordie Howe have been well documented, and how Gretzky looked up to Howe as his mentor so much. But given how close you and Wayne Gretzky are, can you maybe articulate for our audience just how influential Gordie Howe was and is on Wayne Gretzky and Wayne Gretzky's way of being?
He's probably the second most influential man in his life after his father. As you know, Wayne is devoted to his father, and almost every time he appears on TV or comments upon something, he says, "My dad always said," and some of them often refer to Gordie as well. "My dad always said you should do it like Gordie," more or less. And I think perhaps, I'm sure you've had a lot of people on today talking about various anecdotes and things that Gordie did, and perhaps what people may not realize is the impact that he had on Canada's hockey legacy, and it was a legacy that was perpetuated through Wayne. If you get to know some of these players who play at the national level for Team Canada, I think they consistently make us proud in the various Canada Cups, World Championships. They have a devotion to the game, and there's an ongoing continuity. There wasn't in 1984 when Canada almost lost the Canada Cup to the Soviet Union in a great series because there was a division then, because almost half the team played for Edmonton and almost half of the rest of them played for the Islanders, and these two couldn't get along, but then they did. And I think part of that had to do with Wayne's knowledge of the way Gordie had the team concept. And of course, everybody says, "Oh, well, you know, you're Canadian, you're all in the same team together," and it's a nice fantasy, but you really need somebody to bring it all together, and that happened there. And I've seen in subsequent years, when you get those national teams, the senior guys take the junior guys under their wing, the upcoming stars who are playing for Canada for their first time maybe, and they go golfing together and they go to dinner together, and they talk about their responsibilities to the nation, their responsibilities to the media in many cases, because that's the link between them and the fans. And of course, on the Team Canada level, usually the media is a bit more on side than it sometimes is at the team level. And they talk about the things that they need to do together and how to work together and how to improve their game and the importance to the nation and the importance of wearing that maple leaf or whatever aggregation of symbols Team Canada or the Hockey Canada has come up with at the time. And all this is passed along. It's the kind of stuff that Gordie passed along to Wayne. At one time, you know, very, very early on, Wayne wasn't as available as he became for the vast majority of his career, and it was suggested to him, you know, Gordie Howe wouldn't do that. And that was a change in Wayne. He never blew off any more interviews, and they used to travel around that team, which was dominating hockey at the time. And, of course, wherever they went, Wayne would be the center of attention. Wayne was the guy they always wanted to talk to between periods. Even if they were playing exhibition games, Wayne always played. He never missed any. And all this comes from his idolization of Gordie Howe. Not all of it, but an awful lot of it. And he was encouraged in that sense in his father. So when we look at Gordie's contribution to hockey, it didn't end with his playing days. It continued through Wayne Gretzky, and it continues to this day, where these players who play for Canada carry on the traditions that those people have instilled.
Al, often when we think of Gordie Howe, you think about the Stanley Cups and you think about the Art Ross trophies and the Hart trophies and the fact that he was playing in the WHA with his sons well into his late 40s. But is it safe to say that Gordie Howe is going to be remembered for the class act that he was off the ice?
Well, it'll be a large part of it, certainly, and others have done that. John Beliveau, of course, is one, but excuse me, Gordie will be remembered as well, I think, as a complete athlete. But yeah, he was a really classy guy off the ice, and unfortunately, not as many people got to see it as they did with some other hockey players. It's generally forgotten how badly he was treated by the Detroit Red Wings, and how even his teammate, Ted Lindsay, who was the general manager at the time, made his life difficult when he wanted to go back and play for the Red Wings with Mark at a later time. And he came up with that subsequently famous line that a lot of people now use. It was the first time I ever heard it was from Gordie. When asked about the treatment at the Red Wings, he said, "They gave me the mushroom treatment. They threw me in the basement and threw shit at me." That's really the way he was treated. He likes those analogies, eh? Did you hear the turtle one that he likes to use?
Please tell us.
He says he likes to be thought of like a turtle, hard on the outside, soft on the inside, and willing to stick his neck out whenever he needs to. But anyway, that's the way he... So because I think partly of the treatment that he got at the hands of the Red Wings in those days, he didn't become the off-ice hockey figure that some of these other people became. Like Jean Beliveau continued to be involved with Montreal, and Gordie didn't really, but he has been an ambassador, and he has been an available, and he did continue to do things. When Wayne was going to break Gordie's record, Gordie was traveling around with Wayne, and so I got to see him a fair bit, and that's where I put a couple of those little things on Twitter. I don't know if you saw them. On one occasion, when the woman came up to him, and she said, "I had a dream about you last night," and Gordie said, "Was I good?" But he doesn't say it in a nasty, sardonic way. He has this little, aw, shucks, farm boy kind of look, a kind of Will Rogers homespun attitude towards it, and he smiles, and you can't dislike him when he makes these little jokes like that. And he was always good to everybody who came up. And I mentioned as well, after Wayne's wedding, he stood out there at least 2 hours, maybe longer, I don't know, just signing autographs outside the church after Wayne and Janet had left and gone back to the hotel and started to prepare for the reception and that. And he stayed out there. And then when we were doing the tour in 1994, I guess it was, after the Rangers had won the Cup, so, and hockey was really popular, so Gary figured it would be a good time to shut down the league. And we did that tour of Scandinavia, and Gordie came over for a little while, and just to see those two guys, like, he'd go on the ice in the skates, just to see Wayne and Gordie just sitting beside each other and in their underwear, sort of, and just chatting and totally at ease and totally in their element, in the hockey element. Yeah. My memories of Gordie, when I think of him, as I said when you asked me about him being a gentleman, that's certainly true, but I grew up in Windsor, Ontario, and I lived closer to Tiger Stadium than most of Detroit. Sure. Windsor is essentially a suburb of Detroit. All the radio stations are from Detroit, TV stations and everything, and you grow up thinking like a Detroiter, and we knew then the stories about Gordie that were sort of legendary but true, that he would go out to Tiger Stadium and go and do batting practice with Al Kaline, a baseball Hall of Famer who was his friend, and then routinely put homers into the seats. I mean, he was a great baseball player. I don't know about playing, but he could certainly hit, and I don't know what he was like as a fielder, so he could have certainly been a DH, I believe, in the major leagues. And that was another story I don't know if you saw, but I've been reading some of this journalism regarding Gordie today, and it has been fantastic. I think I'm often critical of the journalistic community today, but I think if you go onto whatever sites you want to use and find all these things that people are writing about Gordie today, this is just journalism at its best. There are all these great stories, all these great remembrances, and all these accolades and evaluations, and I think it's just been superb. And one of them was from Dennis Hull, and he went golfing with Dennis Hull. And they were the first ones out in the morning, and so they didn't even get to go to the driving range or anything like that. They just get out and start hitting the balls, and Gordy shoots a 68. And Dennis said, "My Lord, you know," he said, "here you are. I mean, you're the best hockey player in the world. You come out in golf and you hit a 68. We know you're a great baseball player. You play with Al Kaline and everything. I mean, you can do it." Gordy says, "You should see me bowl."
Al Strachan joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Al, of course, a Hockey Hall of Fame journalist, sharing some memories about Gordy Howe.
You know, Al, getting back to Gordy Howe on the ice, he obviously scored 801, pardon me, career NHL goals, a record that stood for I believe 30 years until Wayne Gretzky broke that record, finishing with 894. One thing that a lot of people don't know about Gordie Howe was that he was ambidextrous, and yeah, he could shoot, even though he was a right winger, he could sometimes shoot from the opposite hand, either from the right hand or the left hand. Can you talk about how that was such an effective tool for Gordie Howe during his career in the NHL and WHA?
I can't think of anybody else who's even really tried it, with the exception of Yvan Kournoué, who tried it a little bit at one point during the Canadiens' heydays in the 70s, and it wasn't really the best idea Yvan ever had, and Scott Bowman quickly told him to forget the idea and get on with it. Part of the problem, of course, with today's hockey is that guys use such significant curves in their sticks that you can't do that. Gordy used a straight stick. And that was another influence on Wayne, who used a pretty straight stick almost all his life, and was told by Gordy to develop his backhand. You know, that famous picture that everybody's seen where Gordy's got the stick around Wayne's neck, and that during that interview there, or that whatever you would call it, wasn't really an interview, just a photo op or whatever. Yeah, and but Gordy said, "Work on your backhand, kid." And Gordy did, but you couldn't do that. So Gordy was not only ambidextrous in that he could shoot from either side, which made life difficult for goalies, but he also had a backhand, which most players today simply do not have. And any pro goalie will tell you that a backhand is the hardest shot to counter, that they just seems to fool them in some ways because they don't see them that often, you know. So But you couldn't do it today, I don't think, with those sticks that they have.
Al Strachan joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about Gordie Howe. You know, Al, you know, one of the comments you hear most often as we've been talking about Gordie for the past 24, 48 hours is just, you know, how fierce he was on the ice and then how much of a gentleman he was off the ice. Can you think of another NHL player, or really another athlete, who was that, for lack of a better word, mean on the ice, but was so well regarded off the ice?
A lot of the enforcers are like that, but of course they don't have the skills that Gordy had. What made that unique, or certainly highly unusual in the NHL, was that this was a really high caliber player. I mean, you look at some of the guys that were enforcers, genuine enforcers, back when we used to have them, whether it would be Marty McSorley or Pierre Bouchard or, a whole whack of them. They were just good, fun guys off the ice for the most part. But they weren't the kind of hockey players that Gordy was, so that's what really added to the whole picture. And he was genuinely tough. I don't know how many people realize that they may have heard today or yesterday about the fact that he just really, really beat up Lou Fontanato for the Rangers. Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't just take on a defenseman. Lou Fontanato was the Rangers' enforcer. And much as I love and idolize Wayne Gretzky and Bobby Orr and guys like that, they wouldn't go after an enforcer. Bobby Orr would stand up for himself more maybe than Wayne would. But, you know, Sidney and Ovechkin and these guys, great players, but they would never go after a guy who was a genuine enforcer and not only win the battle, but win it decisively so much that you broke the guy's nose, cut his face open and everything else, you know. But Gordy was like that, and he had a tremendous amount of respect from everyone else. And he insisted, really, that he be a part of the team. And I guess this doesn't really have an awful lot to do with the question you asked, but it just crossed my mind there. Maybe other people may not have mentioned this one unless you talked to Harry Neal today.
We did.
But Harry Neal was his coach. in Hartford in the WHA. And Harry one time was very upset about the way his team had played and unloaded on them in the dressing room and said, except for Gordy here, you all, you know, and he just went after them. And then later that evening, the knock on the hotel door, and it's Gordy at Harry's door, and he said, please don't ever do that again. Don't exclude me. When you're criticizing the team, I'm part of the team. And if the team has let you down, then I let you down. So please don't exclude me from criticism like that. You know, so goes back to what I was saying with regard to the first question. That concept of team was very, very, very strong in Gordy.
Hockey Hall of Fame journalist Al Strachan joins us as we remember the life and times of Gordy Howe.
You know, Al, when you talk about numbers, and there are no shortage of numbers when it comes to Gordy Howe's career, when you talk about the 801 career goals, second all-time, of course. But for me, there are two numbers that stand out when you're talking about Gordy Howe's career. In his 25 seasons with the Red Wings, Howe was top five in NHL scoring for 20 consecutive years. And the second number, at age 50, he led the New England Whalers of the WHA in scoring with 96 points. Is it safe to say that Gordie Howe's on-ice legacy is going to be defined more so by his longevity as opposed to just his simple goal-scoring ability?
Well, perhaps not defined by, but certainly magnified by. I mean, the great players, if you look at them, how many times in a row did Bobby win the Norris Trophy? How many times in a row did Wayne win the Hart Trophy? These truly, truly great players do have those very long streaks of accolades. So I wouldn't say that it really defined it, but perhaps it proved it and magnified it. And another thing that, again, you didn't ask, and I'm just going to stick this in anyway. I think perhaps people may not have known just what a great relief it was to the family, for lack of a better word, or maybe a great addition to the lives of the family, to have what happened on the medical front with Gordy in the last year and a half or so. Mark Howe is still scouting and showed up earlier, I guess it was last year and this year, in the Florida press box. And I go to the Panthers games quite a bit, and we chat, 'cause I've known Mark forever and ever. And the first time, a little more than a year ago, he was telling me, it was right at the end of the season, actually, because he was in there scouting the Panthers in case they made the playoffs. So it would have been March a year ago. And he was just telling me what had happened to his dad. How he said he was literally on death's doorstep. He said, we had given up. We were starting to make all the plans, the funeral plans and the legacy and everything else. And then it was suggested that he go to Mexico and get that stem cell treatment. And he said, we couldn't believe it. You know, Murray, one of his other sons, is a doctor and had arranged this. He said, and he couldn't move. He couldn't speak. He was just laying in his bed. He was basically just a vegetable. And he got this treatment. He said, and then he's up and he's about. He said he was sitting in our house that the granddaughter was playing on. And he said he gets tired a little bit, but he was up at 11 o'clock at night some nights playing with the kids and everything. He said it was just a fantastic turnaround. And then I saw Mark again about 3 months ago. And he was saying something along the lines of, you know, how great it was, because they knew that it couldn't last forever. And apparently, according to what I've read, Gordy died of old age, really, more than anything else. And he was 88. But it made Mark and Murray and Kathy and Marty appreciate the fact that he was back, really, and that they were having more time with him again, because they thought they'd lost their father and they thought that it was all over. But he came back and he had that treatment. And so maybe for all of us, or for our parents or whatever, that might help our lives too, because this concept is receiving more notoriety or publicity because of this. Mark told me that he got a call from Bart Starr's family, because apparently Bart Starr is having some similar problems to what Gordy had. And Mark said, you know, I'm not shilling for any company or anything, but I'll tell you what happened with my dad, and it was just miraculous. So that's another factor in it all as well, that Gordy may have contributed to saving some other people's lives, and maybe it contributed to getting politicians to receive the to understand the efficacy of the stem cell treatments.
Al Strachan's our guest talking about Gordie Howe. Al, we'll let you go on this last question. I mean, you look back, you know, 36 years ago to the 1980 All-Star Game in Detroit, of course, which was turned into really a celebration of Gordie Howe. And then you fast forward to, you know, this past March on the eve of his 88th birthday back in Detroit again, you know, 20,000 hockey fans singing happy birthday to Mr. Hockey. You know, Is his influence and his impact as significant as it is in the hockey world and right across Canada and into the United States? I can't think of another hockey player that would get honored by the U.S. president upon his passing. But, you know, is his impact and his touching of Detroit just more than we can totally fully appreciate being not in Detroit?
It probably is, yeah. I hope that we don't have the opportunity to express that kind of legacy or accolades to any other major hockey player to the near future. But, yeah, he was a god in Detroit. And as I said, I grew up there more or less, you know, across the river. And it was never unexpected that Gordie would just show up somewhere. My wife grew up there in Detroit. She was an American, lived out in Berkeley, Michigan, which is a suburb, went down to the local sporting goods store that was owned by Warren Godfrey, who was a teammate. And there's Gordie hanging around down there, and, you know, they were just little girls at the time. They got all giggly and everything and went in, but Gordie signed something for them and smiled at them and talked to them and that sort of thing. He did that for everybody. And whoever you spoke to in that part of the world, and if Gordie's name came up, they had some story like that, that of somebody that they knew or something that they had done themselves. And Gordie himself said that his biggest concern about the changes in today's hockey from the way it used to be was the inaccessibility of the players. He said, you know, we used to walk down the aisle and to get onto the rink, and the fans could talk to us and they could shout at us, and they knew where we were. We'd take the subway to the games in Toronto, and we were just available and accessible to the fans, and all that has gone now. You know, hockey's a different world. It was a sort of a small-time game back then when there was one penalty box and it was shared by everyone in it, you know, which created some entertaining moments. But there was that small-town aspect of hockey, and I think that's the thing that he regrets the most. But he was always just revered by the people of Detroit for that reason and for the fact that, you know, at one point they thought they'd lost him. There was a very real possibility of him dying after that incident in the 1950 Stanley Cup playoffs. I wasn't there for that one, fortunately. I was there for a lot of the later ones with Gordie, but I'm not that old. But, you know, we all knew about it. Everybody knew about, well, Gordie Howe almost died that time, you know. And it was forgotten by most people what the actual incident was, but everybody in the Detroit-Windsor area knew that Gordie Howe had almost been killed in a hockey game. And as I said, people knew that he went out and went to Tiger Stadium and put him in those left field seats there, hitting batting practice out there with Al Kaline, you know, and 320 down the lines, so he could put him up in the upper deck and everything. And when he said, you should have seen me bowl, a lot of people did. He did go bowling. It was popular in Detroit. And so, yes, the answer to your question, yeah, he is just a phenomenal person in the history of Detroit. And the new bridge that's going in there, you know, they have the Ambassador Bridge forever and a day, and they're building a new one now, which will be the Gordie Howe Bridge. And they have that famous statue downtown of Joe Louis's fist. And I hope that they do something downtown for Gordie. I'm sure that they will. He deserves it.
Al Strachan is a Hockey Hall of Fame journalist. His most recent book is called 99, Gretzky, His Game, His Story. Al, greatly appreciate your time this morning, and thanks so much for sharing these wonderful anecdotes and stories about Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe.
All right, do it again.
Take care, Al. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Grant Saunier. Grant is a former general manager of the Charlottetown Islanders. He's a former ESPN NHL draft insider. He joins us to discuss the QMJHL and their draft-eligible prospects for the upcoming NHL draft 2 weeks from yesterday in Buffalo, New York. Grant, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, Guru. Good morning, Ezra. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Grant. Always like to have you on this time of year to discuss the QMJHL. And when we talk about the QMJHL as it relates to this upcoming NHL draft, we start with Pierre-Luc Dubois. He's scheduled to be probably a top five pick. I think it would be a surprise for many people if he falls below number five. He played his junior hockey down in Cape Breton this past season, you know, putting up 99 points in 62 games for the Screaming Eagles. You know, having seen Pierre-Luc Dubois up close and personal, what jumps out to you the most about the skill set and the game that he brings to the NHL draft in 2 weeks' time?
Well, his size is obviously very attractive. I think the thing for me, watching this kid grow from midget into his first year, played as an underage in the queue, and then last year had a remarkable year. The thing that stands out for me that separates him from normal skill guys, you mentioned he put up almost 100 points. This kid's got some real nasty in his game, and I really like that. I think we all this time of year watch the Stanley Cup playoffs. We realize just how much grit it takes to play at the Stanley Cup final level. It requires a great deal of grit, and this kid is truly gritty. That's the thing that really steps up for me about him. I've seen just about all the kids, certainly all the Q, but I've been fortunate enough to see a lot of the other top players play, whether it's in the European tournaments or some of the OHL players that are up in the top 10. And this kid, it's not a surprise to me that he's a big time player and high in the rankings. I told a number of NHL teams when they meet this kid, they're going to fall in love with him, and that's just what happened. He went to the combine, and I know teams fell in love with this player.
Grant, the next highest ranked player out of the QMJHL is right winger Julien Gauthier out of Val-d'Or. He's the nephew of a former NHLer, Denny Gauthier. He had 41 goals in 54 games this past year. I know he's got great size at 6'4", 225 pounds. What do you think his ceiling is in the NHL?
Well, he's an interesting player. I think, and you guys know this, like, so many of the tournaments have such an impact on these players, whether it be under 18, World Junior, and going into the World Junior this year, Julien was really, he was considered much higher than where he sits now going into the draft 2 weeks out. And I think part of that is he didn't have a great tournament. He didn't, you know, he was sick and he was off a little bit. He didn't score. I can tell you one thing, this kid's a monster. He's so big and strong. His game should translate into the National Hockey League game. He's an elite goal scorer in terms of loves to shoot, has an accurate shot. Reminds me a lot of Mantha that came out of Val-d'Or, bigger and stronger at the same age, but an elite goal scorer. And Detroit prospect Anthony Mantha has got a chance to be a regular in the National Hockey League, and that's what this kid is. He's going to be able to handle the rigors of the National Hockey League. He's very, very well put together, and he's a natural goal scorer.
You know, Grant, I remember Denny Gauthier, former defenseman for the Calgary Flames. He had a bit of nastiness to his game as well, so he's probably just like his uncle.
Yeah, I don't see that in Julien. I'm not saying he's a shy player. I think he's going to be able to handle the rigors of the NHL. But, you know, when I talk about Pierre-Luc Dubois, like, I see real nasty in him. Like, he had some suspendable hits, open ice hits. He's got that little extra in him. I don't see that in Julien, but I certainly don't see a shy player either. So, yeah, Denny, I remember Denny for sure, and he played with a lot of jam, different positions, obviously. But Julien Gauthier has fallen in the rankings a little bit. He could end up being a real good surprise for somebody later in the first round.
You're listening to the illegal. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Grant Saunier, discussing the QMJHL draft eligible prospects. Grant, moving away from a player specific, or you know, how, if you look at the list of players, you know, who are draft eligible out of the Q this year, how would you rank it? Is this a quality class? I mean, obviously these are quality individuals, but is this a bit of a down year for the Q, or do you think that this is just, are there maybe more depth players than they are bona fide superstars?
I think the latter is more accurate. There's no question that Dubois is an elite player. I mean, in some years, maybe he'd be considered number one or number two, but obviously there's some pretty good players ranked ahead of him this year in the likes of Laine and Puljujarvi and Matthews. So he's an elite player, but I think from an overall standpoint, I don't think there's as many players depth-wise, but there's some really good late picks, and there's some kids in the queue. It's so fresh that I've been fired. I'm still saying, "Ow, it's not my league anymore." But in the queue, there's some players that have already gone through the draft that I think are going to get drafted this year, and I think they're going to be guys that have a chance to have really good careers.
Grant, the next guy we wanted to ask you about was Vitaly Abramov, Russian left winger, played for the Gatineau Olympique. He's next on our list here. He was the QMJHL Rookie of the Year. He surprised a lot of people and put up 93 points in 63 games. And a lot of people think that he might go in the first round. Others have him going later in the second round. Do you think he has the skating ability and the offensive talent to be a top six winger in the NHL?
I do. I think he's got what it takes to play. The hard thing to project Vitaly into the NHL is because of his size. He's 5'8". So that scares some people. But you look at some of the people scoring big goals in the National Hockey League right now in the playoffs. They're not 6'4 and 6'5 all the time. There's some small players. You have to be a dimensional player when you're small. And this kid's got some dimension. There's no question about it. I know a lot of people have Pascal Laberge rated ahead of him on some lists, but If it was my draft list, I'd think I would take a chance on Vitaly Abramov ahead of Laberge, and they're both really good players.
Grant Saunier is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Grant, a player you're particularly familiar with, Evan Fitzpatrick, the goaltender out of Sherbrooke. A lot of people have him maybe late second, early third, in and around there. How do you see Evan Fitzpatrick? You saw him so much. What about his game jumps out to you, in terms of his next step in his hockey career?
Well, he's big. And that is one trend with goaltending is the big goaltenders, and he's a big kid. Know him very well. We obviously played Sherbrooke a couple of years ago in the playoffs, and he ended up emerging as their number one. I goaltending's funny where they go, because once one goaltender goes, it seems like a whole bunch of goaltenders are going to go right after him in the draft. Mm-hmm. So he easily could be one of the first goaltenders selected. He had a great under 18. In North Dakota, he really showed that he's a big time prospect, and I think that opened the eyes to a lot of people. Sometimes when you get off of your regular junior team and you get to play behind the likes of the D-Core and the team that Canada was able to put together, you realize that maybe there's a little bit more substance to the goaltender. I didn't play nets. It's really hard to handicap a goaltender. To me, the most important stat is stop the puck. And this kid stops the puck more than not, and I like his ability. I like the way that he challenges and uses his size, and you know, for me to sit here and say he's going to be a bona fide starting goaltender in the NHL, I couldn't say that when I was running NHL scouting staff. He's got the right mentality and the right makeup physically to give him a real good shot of being a good goaltender.
Grant, we wanted to ask you about a couple defensemen here, Frederick Allard of Chicoutimi and Samuel Girard of the Shawinigan Cataracts. Starting off with Samuel Girard, he led all QMJHL in defenseman scoring. He put up 74 points in 67 games, although many people have Frederick Allard rated a little bit higher than him. He was ranked 38th overall, which would put him somewhere in the second round. Do you think teams are going to be a little bit scared off by his size? He's about 5'8", and do you think he has the potential to be a steal in the second round?
Well, I mean, he is such a wonderful hockey player to watch. And as an NHL scout, you're going to watch him, and you're obviously going to be concerned about the size. You know, whether you think your team can afford to have a player like Spurgeon in your lineup, like Minnesota, at that size, that's really going to be an organizational decision. This kid has elite thinking. His anticipation skills and the way he can spin away from a forecheck and jump up into the play. He's a big time player. It's just whether or not at that size he's going to be able to play. And I think someone will take a chance on him. And again, it'll be what the organization does with him and whether or not the organization can afford to have a player like that in the lineup. I will say this, on the power play, he's a special player. I don't think there's any doubt he could play in the power play in the National Hockey League the way I project this kid. In terms of Allard will get knocked down a little bit in some people's minds because he doesn't play to his size. He's got decent size, but he's not a physical player. But he's got a really good head for the game. I think he makes an excellent first pass. He's a good transitional defenseman. I don't see him at the NHL level or at the pro level putting up big numbers. But there's great value in today's game of being able to retrieve the puck and make a good first pass. And I think that's what Allard does. I think he's a really good prospect.
Grant Sonia is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Grant, you know, you look at the players that we've discussed with you already. Is there anybody that's sort of maybe flying under the radar that's coming out of the QMJHL that, you know, isn't getting the pub, it isn't getting the notoriety ahead of the NHL draft, but somebody that you've seen in your time in the league and scouting the league and everything else that you've circled and said, this player, well, he might not look like much on the ice, or he might not look fantastic on the ice, but he's got that it quality that some players just are able to, the determination necessary to be a quality NHLer.
Yeah, the one player in particular, and obviously in our division, I saw this team a lot, and I'd always list it on a lot of lists, but late in the sixth or seventh round. There's some teams that have had great success in taking players that have already been through the draft. But Jeffrey Trouchon-Viel, this kid would go through a wall for anybody. He went from scoring 8 goals to 33 goals last year. He had over 130 penalty minutes. I've seen him fight all the heavyweights. This guy is such a team player, such a competitor. I just don't know how anybody late in the draft can pass up on this kid. I think he's got a chance to play because of the character, and character can take you a long way. And I think this past year he's proven that he's got a lot more skill than a lot of people gave him credit for, you know, 2 years ago when he was draft eligible in his first year for the draft. So as a 97, I understand teams don't want to focus on them, but it was really hard not to notice this kid this year. He had a really remarkable year highlighted by his character.
And Grant, what team was he on?
Acadie Bathurst.
Okay, we'll make sure that we keep an eye on him. We're going to be down in Buffalo for the draft. Grant, we have one last question for you here. You mentioned Pascal Laberge earlier, played for the Victoriaville Tigre in the QMJHL, had a great regular season. He's projected to go somewhere late first round, early second round. A lot of scouts weren't impressed with the way he played at the World Under-18s. In your opinion, how much does a strong or weak performance at the World Under-18s affect where scouts rank that player?
Well, what happens is general managers and assistant GMs go to those tournaments at the end of the year, and that's the impression they have of the player. But this is one player that's a little bit of a teeter-totter because he had a remarkable prospects game. So what happens is when the general managers and AGMs go and they see a player that didn't perform really well, it's going to require, if the head scout or the scouting department really likes the player, it's going to require a little bit more of a battle to convince. But I think the good teams let their staffs make those tough decisions. Pascal Laberge, for me, the one issue he has is his skating. It's awkward looking. He appeared to be a little bit out of sorts in North Dakota, but he also wasn't given the prime time to play with the high end players like Logan Browns and those guys of that roster. So, you know, finding his way in that tournament might have been a little bit more difficult. But the prospects game, he and Dubois were the talk of the tournament, the talk of the game, actually. So it's a little bit misleading, and I think he's a good player, and I think someone is going to step up. And skating does improve, and if his feet improve, I think he's got a chance to be a really good player.
Grant Sonia is the former general manager of the Charlottetown Islanders. He's a former ESPN NHL draft analyst, draft insider. Grant, always appreciate your time and insight, particularly into the QMJHL draft eligible prospects. And we'll do it again real soon, our friend.
Thanks for having me. I'd be remiss if I didn't send my condolences to the Howe family.
Of course.
I was the general manager of the Detroit Vipers, and Gordie Howe's grandson worked for me, actually. I know Mark, his son, quite well, and terrible news about his passing. I know Al Strachan was on, and I just want to send my condolences, like the rest of the hockey world, on the passing of such a great hero.
Absolutely. Thank you, Grant. Appreciate your time this morning.
Take care.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll talk about some coaching news around the league. You're listening to IC on TSN 1290.
The sky is gray.
I feel the Minnesota Wild, they're a fast team, their defense are quick, so we know how important it is to take time and space away. I mentioned that earlier, so I think we want to be a team that's aggressive at the right time and try to get clears and not let teams get set up and use our speed with the forwards are very quick, and the defense can skate and put pressure at the right time, so I think that would be a good recipe to start with.
That is Scott Stevens, Hockey Hall of Fame defenseman and new assistant coach of the Minnesota Wild, one of Ezzie's favorites of all time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know how much you you respect and appreciate what you saw from Scott Stevens on the ice. Of course, pretty much any of his hits now would he be suspended for the next 80 games. But he was a ferocious defenseman in his days patrolling the blue line for those Stanley Cup winning New Jersey Devils teams. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. So Scott Stevens gets hired with the Wild. He's going to be on the bench with Bruce Boudreau. He spent three seasons earlier since he retired with the Devils. He spent last year working for NHL Network. You know, Scott Stevens, you think a good fit, good defense there in Minnesota, obviously led by Ryan Suter, but that seems like it's a nice fit there. Bruce Boudreau, you know, known as being a good defensive coach. Scott Stevens gets a nice defense to, you know, that he gets to play with a little bit. Seems like a lot of good sense there with that hire in Minnesota.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a little bit biased, as you mentioned, Drew. I consider Scott Stevens to be my favorite player of all time. But when you're talking about Scott Stevens as an assistant coach, he wasn't brought back last year. John Hines brought in his own assistant coaches, Alan Nasruddin being one of them. Mm-hmm. But Scott Stevens gets back into coaching, and I think I do like the hire. Bias aside, you know, Bruce Boudreau, you know, in Anaheim and before that in Washington was known more as an offensive minded coach, and Scott Stevens known more as a defensive defenseman. Even though earlier in his career, he put up big time numbers with the Washington Capitals and later the St. Louis Blues. But, you know, I digress here. Scott Stevens, you know, I think especially when you're talking about how he can use what he did in his NHL career, a long NHL career, as you mentioned, a Hall of Fame career, that group of defensemen that he's getting, Drew, in Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
is much better than the group of defensemen he had as a coach in New Jersey. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, his playing career, he played with guys like Scott Niedermeyer, Brian Rafalski, Ken Danico, guys like that. I'm talking about, you know, the players over the last 3 or 4 years that the Devils had. But when you're talking about Ryan Suter and Jonas Brodin and Jared Spurgeon and Marco Scandella and Matthew Dumba, Mike Riley, I think Scott Stevens' influence is going to be felt the most with some of the younger defensemen. Scott Stevens can show them how to use their body, in a physical way more. I mean, I picked the Minnesota Wild to go to the Stanley Cup Finals this past year, and I realized that they have some retooling to do. Well, hey, I mean, the Minnesota Wild this year were a mess. I mean, they almost missed the playoffs, Drew.
They should have if the Western Conference was better this year. The Wild weren't really a playoff
team. But needless to say, their defense is their strength.
Yeah.
And their weakness right now is that they're not quick enough up front, and they're still strong in goal with Devan Dubnyk. They maybe want to bring in another goaltender to push Devan Dubnyk a bit, Drew. They got to get rid of Thomas Vanek's contract, but certainly having a guy like Scott Stevens, who has the Hall of Fame career and has the experience as an assistant coach, I think can't hurt. And so I really like the hire. I really like the hiring of Bruce Boudreaux. I know Richie disagreed with me a little bit, but I think Bruce Boudreaux will do a good job in Minnesota.
Yeah, the Wild also hired a second assistant coach this week, that being John Anderson, who Winnipeg Jets, Manitoba Moose fans might remember being from his days with the Chicago Wolves of the AHL. And he was with the Thrashers, of course. He was a head coach for the Thrashers
and,
as well.
And Drew, John Anderson has had a long career coaching in professional hockey. He's known as more of an X's and O's type of guy, right? Like he's going to be a guy who's, I imagine, responsible a lot for the special teams.
Sure.
He's going to work more with the forwards as opposed to, obviously, Scott Stevens is going to work with the defensemen. Yeah. So
worth noting, of course, him and Bruce Boudreaux were teammates, including with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So John Anderson and Bruce Boudreaux have a lot of ties going back over the years.
Yes. And, you know, I think they've put together a very impressive coaching staff there.
Yeah.
So, again, the Minnesota Wild, we talked about this, you know, when they got eliminated from the playoffs when we were doing our post-mortem of the Minnesota Wild season. This is a team, when you're paying guys like Zach Parise, Ryan Suter, Jason Pominville, that type of money, veteran players. I mean, this Minnesota Wild team, they are trying to win now. This isn't a team that's going to be happy with just making the playoffs. So I expect the Minnesota Wild, Chuck Fletcher, to be very active in the offseason, whether that's free agency or via trades.
Yeah, the Wild will be an interesting team to watch. There's two NHL teams that still don't have head coaches. Lots of teams with different machinations regarding the assistant coaches. We expect the Jets are going to hire an assistant coach before the season starts as well, with Pascal Vincent moving to the Manitoba Moose. But both the Calgary Flames and the Anaheim Ducks are without a head coach. Are you surprised? I know that, you know, they said when they were starting their coaching search that they were going to be patient with it. It's June 11th. It seems hard to believe that they're still without head coaches at this late stage.
Yeah, Drew, I am a little bit surprised. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Anaheim Ducks and the Calgary Flames name their head coach before the NHL draft coming up in about 13 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've heard various candidates for the head coaching positions. Randy Carlyle has been rumored to be possibly the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks again for a second time.
Sure.
And then Calgary, you've heard a bunch of different names, whether that's a guy like Travis Green or, I mean, Mike Yeo is somebody who we thought might be a candidate for these head coaching vacancies.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about two teams, again, that are in different stages. I mean, the Calgary Flames missed the playoffs last year after making the playoffs the previous year. I think they're probably going to want to bring in maybe a younger coach, whereas the Anaheim Ducks, I think, want to bring in a veteran coach. But yes, I am a little bit surprised that we haven't heard a name yet. But you know, on the topic of Randy Carlyle, you know how big of a fan I am of Randy Carlyle, so I would have absolutely no problem with Bob Murray hiring his former coach back
a second time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It would certainly be interesting, because you know, when Carlyle was dismissed, I mean, I think Bob Murray did it grudgingly more than thinking he really needed to be done. That's the Anaheim Ducks are a very interesting team. They're a win now team. To some extent, like the Minnesota Wild, but I think they're more win now than the Wild are.
Yes.
But
how many more years of Corey Perry, Ryan Getzlaff, and Ryan Kesler do you have in their prime? I mean, you only have three or four more years, maybe, at most in their prime.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's that many. I mean, you can argue it's pretty much this year, next year, and you might be into some trouble there in Anaheim, salary cap-wise.
Drew, you do have some good young players coming through, but
particularly on the defense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why there were a lot of rumors that they might try to move a defenseman to get a top six forward, whether that's a Sammy Vatanen or Shea Theodore, one of these defensemen. Mm-hmm. But certainly the Anaheim Ducks are going to be getting a coach that has NHL experience, I think.
Well, there's a lot of talk that Travis Green might be the guy there, though. And Travis Green does not have the NHL experience. He's very well respected by the sounds of it, a leading candidate for the job, but he doesn't have any NHL experience. So you wonder how that would work with a veteran team like that. It's you know, veteran team with some... I think when you're talking about Kesler and you're talking about Corey Perry, those are guys who might have prickly personalities. Would that be a nice way of putting it, that they might be a little rough around the edges?
Yeah, I don't know if Travis Green is the right fit there. I would think that Travis Green would be a better fit in Calgary.
With a younger team,
With a younger
saying?
Team.
Yeah.
Some people think that a younger team should have a veteran coach. I mean, it depends what your philosophy is on coaching, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, Drew, if you're a good coach, you're a good coach. And Travis Green certainly has done everything to earn an NHL head coaching job.
Sure.
But you're right. I mean, when you're talking about guys like Perry and Kessler, you're certainly talking about strong personalities, strong NHL personalities. So, well, it remains to be seen. But I wouldn't expect them. The Ducks and Flames, that is, I wouldn't expect those two teams to not have a coach very much longer. I would expect that announcement to come sometime in the next week or two.
Probably before the draft is yep. what you're suspecting. Well, if it happens, we'll bring it to you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's head to break when we come back. Sounds like the expansion rules are becoming a little more well-known. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The number one topic on the agenda, obviously, is expansion. When will it occur, or will it occur at any time? Las Vegas' new arena is opened, as is the one in Quebec City. Those are the two cities that could potentially join the National Hockey League as early as next year. And while no one is talking publicly, before the Board of Governors meeting on June 22nd, this group will come through with a recommendation.
It's becoming more and more clear that expansion is coming to the NHL. The rules surrounding the NHL expansion draft. We'd heard a little trickle of information a number of months ago about the rules. It sounds like teams are beginning to be informed more and more about what they are going to have to protect and unprotect for a potential NHL expansion draft. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're looking for something to do tonight, the NHL is giving away new franchises.
Drew, I'm always looking for something to do.
Okay, well, the NHL is giving away new franchises, giving them away for $500 million by the sounds of it. We're going to give away four tickets to tonight's 10 p.m. show at Rumors. So give us a call right now. Caller number, well, let's say caller number four right now to 780-1290. You're going to win four tickets to tonight's 10 p.m. show at Rumors Comedy Club to see comedian Trix. He's in town tonight and until next week. So 780-1290, give us a call right now. Caller number four, you got something to do for tonight.
Yeah, shout out to Tyler, actually, who I saw last night.
Ah.
We were out for dinner at a beautiful Italian restaurant on Cordon, and Tyler was actually walking by. So Tyler, of course, from Rumors,
yeah.
So said hi to him.
That's good.
Great guy. And, yes. You know, we obviously are happy to give away these Rumors tickets.
Absolutely.
I'd never leave Rumors unhappy, Drew.
You would never. Nobody ever does leave Rumors
unhappy. I'm never unhappy, period.
Hey, you're a very happy guy.
I'm a very happy guy.
Well, if you're an NHL team, are you happy about these new expansion rules?
No.
No, you're not.
Well, the thing is, Drew, these NHL general managers are going to have some tough decisions to make here. I mean, like, if it gets down to, a top six forward versus a top four defenseman, something like that, right? Because you can only protect 11 players.
You can. Well, here's the options. Teams have, and we talked about this months ago, but it's worth reminding people because they probably forgot. Teams will have a choice between protecting seven forwards, three defensemen, and one goaltender. So that's 11 players altogether. Or eight skaters of any position and one goaltender, meaning nine players in total. So you either go 7-3-1, or you go any 8-1. So you lose out on two extra players, or you lose out on two players if you want to protect, say, seven defensemen and one forward.
You know, Drew, just as an aside here,
yeah,
because you want to get into some of the other expansion draft rules, I see most teams protecting 11, by the way.
Yes, I think so, too. It's unlikely that teams have that many good defensemen or poor forwards and good forwards that they wouldn't protect 11 and would choose to protect 9 instead. I think it's an option available to them. I can't imagine many teams taking advantage of that second option. I think most teams will protect 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goaltender.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So the other rules that came out earlier yesterday, teams cannot reacquire players they trade after January 1st, 2017 for one calendar year. So if you trade a guy at the trade deadline, you cannot reacquire him until the beginning of 2018. that prevents teams from, say, from a Las Vegas from picking a guy and then trading him back to another team in exchange for a draft pick or something. You can't hide players with the new expansion team. Another rule. Teams have to expose at least two forwards and one defenseman who had played either 40 games in the previous season, in the 2016-17 season, or 70 games total in the previous two seasons.
And that shouldn't be a surprise, because when you talk about NHL teams only being able to protect seven forwards, three defensemen, and one goalie, right? You're going to have third-line guys, fourth-line guys who played 40 games for you. So to me, that's kind of almost a given.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it seems like, I mean, this is the NHL. It's you have to be an actuary and a lawyer at the same time to try and figure out all these stupid rules as they implement them in this most ridiculous piecemeal fashion.
Well, you're right, Drew. I mean, they are a little bit complicated here, and we have a couple more. But when you talk about the NHL expansion draft, all you really have to know is that teams are going to lose some really good players. What? They're going to lose. They're not necessarily going to lose their prospects or young players, but they're going to lose some of those depth guys.
Yeah, some good depth veterans, things of that nature. Teams can only lose one player. So once you lose one player, your expansion draft, the risk associated with the expansion draft is over. The expansion team must select players that have a total value of between 60 and 100%. Of the 2016-17 salary cap, meaning they can only be, I mean, what that means is if they, if the salary cap is $70 million, let's say, they have to spend at least $42 million in salary to be at the end of the expansion draft. I don't think that'll be a problem necessarily, because they're going to have to be drafting veterans for the most part, not only young players. So it's a rule that I don't expect is going to really, have much of an effect. The expansion team cannot buy out anyone it picks in the expansion draft until the following offseason. Again, I can't imagine them picking somebody and then buying them out. It wouldn't make any sense, right?
Well, and that's put in there, I imagine, because they don't want players to be selected and then you just go out in free agency and you replace those players, right?
I guess. I mean, I'm not 100% sure what the logic is behind it.
You're right,
it.
Though, Drew. I mean, the expansion team, which we believe is going to be Las Vegas, could
expect.
Be Quebec as well.
But it's not going to be
Quebec. Las Vegas, the expansion franchise, they're going to make sure that they draft players, and the NHL is making it a rule that they're going to have to use the players that they draft, right?
Yeah. The expansion team will be given the same draft lottery odds as the team that finishes third last in the league and cannot pick later than sixth in the 2017 NHL entry draft. It's possible the lottery team could end up with the first overall pick if it wins the lottery. So really, this is a huge change in philosophy, because normally the expansion teams are the doormats of the league for a couple seasons. You think back to, with the Sharks being in the Cup final, Frank Saravelli, our colleague on TSN.ca, has had some great anecdotes about just how terrible those San Jose Sharks teams were for the first couple of years.
Doug Wilson, I believe, was actually one of the first selections.
He was. Mike Sullivan played on that team as well, the current head coach of Pittsburgh. So, the NHL is doing everything in its power to not make the Las Vegas, whatever they're going to be, that bad.
And that's a good thing. I don't think that you want a team come.
$500 million should buy you something.
Let's not get it twisted here, Drew. The Las Vegas expansion team in their first few years is going to be bad.
I don't think they're going to be terrible, though.
I wouldn't expect them to be in the playoffs the first couple of years.
No, but I think that think about it. You're going to get you could very well get a top five pick to start your career, start your season.
Right, but do you even know if that top five pick is going to play that year?
You don't, but usually top five picks as of late have generally been playing. We're expecting that the top three picks this year in the NHL draft are going to play in the NHL next season.
Dylan Strome, for example, didn't play in the NHL.
Fine, fair point.
I'm just saying, because you get the third or fourth overall pick, I mean, if you take Matthew Tkachuk, is he going to go right into the NHL? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe he plays another year in junior.
But if they win the lottery, which isn't unheard of with having the third best odds, maybe they do have Nolan Patrick next year if he's the first overall pick.
Right, but the point that you're trying to make more so is that the Las Vegas expansion team is going to get better players than the Sharks did back in 1991.
Well, the Sharks back in 1991 were an absolute joke.
Right.
And
because the expansion draft rules were terrible.
Well, they did every. The NHL said, okay, you can come into the league, but you're going to be terrible. It's like what they did to the Jets when the Jets moved from the WHA to the NHL.
Right. They didn't let them keep Bobby Hull.
No, they don't let them keep anybody. You're going to come into the league. Congratulations. We don't really want you, but we're going to cut your knees out from under you. You should be just happy to be here for the next 3, 4, 5 years. They're not doing that with Las Vegas. The last rule to discuss, teams must protect players that have no movement clauses active in the 2017-18 season. No movement clauses active in 2016-17 will have no impact. There will likely be exceptions made for players with no movement clauses who are out with career-ending injuries, i.e. Ryan Clough and Nathan Horton. Teams are not expected to be forced to protect those contracts. Meaning, if you have a no-movement clause that expires on July 1st, 2017, you will not have to be protected by the team that owns you on June 24th. But if you have a no-movement clause that expires on July 1st, 2018, you will have to be protected. So this is a bit of a win for current teams that have players under no-movement clauses that expire soon, but not for teams that have no-movement clauses that expire 2 years from now.
Right. And that was something that we already knew about players with no-movement clauses that end after next season weren't going to be exempt.
Right. There was some question. Larry Brooks of the New York Post had reported, I believe it was either last Sunday or within the last couple of weeks, that he had heard or that those players would have to be protected even if their no movement clause expired on July 1st, 2017.
And as far as the Winnipeg Jets go,
yeah,
I know that there are some players that have no movement clauses. They're not always revealed, however.
And the specific details thereof aren't necessarily always
right, because
revealed.
You have modified no movement clauses and stuff like that, and then you have full no movement clauses.
Yeah.
But when the time comes, we'll certainly let everybody know which players are going to be exempt and which players aren't going to be exempt.
We never really, when we looked at it from the Winnipeg Jets perspective back in the day, I mean, there wasn't a huge amount of difficulties regarding the team. But maybe that's changed now, that if they're only allowed to protect three defensemen, as opposed, if they go seven forwards, three defensemen.
And we should mention, too, Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, players in the rookie seasons, those players will be exempt.
Those players will be exempt. But the question is, you know, do they have to, will the Jets have to expose one of, if Jacob Trouba is still around? I mean, you can't keep Trouba, Bufflin, Enstrom, and Myers. You're going to lose one of those guys.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Drew. I mean, GMs are going to have to pick, especially I think when you're talking about defensemen.
Sure.
You're going to lose the third line depth guys on forward.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about the top teams, and the St. Louis Blues are a great example.
Sure.
I mean, are you going to have to pick between Jay Bouwmeester and Colton Parayko, for example, right?
Difficult decisions are going to have to be made by general managers. And I think that what also this might affect is that this might make the trade deadline coming up in at the end of February a much quieter affair, because a guy who's got an expiring contract is much more valuable with an upcoming expansion draft than he would typically be, because you can leave that guy open to be picked. You know, he's probably not going to get picked by a Las Vegas franchise because he's going to be an unrestricted free agent a week later. So these are all the different things that general managers throughout the league are going to have to consider from really as they make deals and as they consider their rosters going forward. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Illegal Curve Pro-Am at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. This Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Should mention congratulations to Tom Maines. He was caller number 4. He wins 4 tickets to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club later on tonight. This segment, it is brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be presenting the 2016 Bell Acres Pro-Am on Friday, July 8th. Play with a pro and enjoy an incredible day of golf featuring hole prizes, pre- and post-round meals, and post-round live entertainment. For more information, visit bellacres.com. And to talk about the 2016 Bell Acres Pro-Am, we're thrilled to be joined now by Bell Acres Director of Golf Operations, James Chapman. James, good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Getting very excited upcoming for the 2016 Bell Acres Pro-Am presented by Illegal Curve. It is a little less than 1 month away, coming up on Friday, July the 8th. You know, for our audience, you know, why don't you describe a little bit about what's going to happen with that Pro-Am coming up on July the 8th?
Okay, absolutely. So what we're going to do that day is you're going to have an opportunity to play with all the local pros that are listening. There is a message in your inbox with an invitation. It's absolutely going to be a fantastic day. And then everyone that wants to play with them, we're going to have a great day. There's going to be a band here. There's going to be food, beverage, lots of golf, and an absolute ton of fun that day.
Well, and Jamie, as you know, Ezzy and I are certainly on the amateur side of the Pro-Am. But
speak for yourself, Drew.
Sorry, I apologize, Ezzy. I'll speak for myself. But for the pros, this is more than just it's certainly going to be a fun day of golf. But it's more than just that. There's a bit of competition. There's a bit of prize money available. This is going to be a serious round of golf for the local professionals here in Winnipeg and the Manitoba area.
Absolutely. All the local pros know exactly that their first priority is to make sure everyone else is having a good time. Secondary, there's a guaranteed $5,000 purse for them.
Wow.
And everyone's going to be witness to them concentrating, playing good golf. And there's absolutely fantastic players around that are going to try and get that $5,000.
Now, Jamie, as you know, Richie, Drew, and myself, we're going to be forming Team Illegal Curve, and obviously we're going to be matched up with your top professional. Speaking of you, absolutely.
So you're starting off the round with a bit of a handicap associated with you,
Yeah. I'm a handicap as well.
Oh, okay.
Jamie, what's the scoring format going to be? Are we going to be dealing with a Texas scramble, or are we going to go with a modified Stableford scoring system? What are we looking at here?
That's a great question. So what we do is we play a modified Stableford competition. So what that is everyone has a handicap of some kind. When you sign up, your local pro will make that handicap for you if you don't have it. But for you guys, I'll make a handicap up for you. And we take, say, the first hole, we take the best score. The second hole, we take the best two scores. The third hole, we take the best three scores. And then the fourth hole, we take the best one score again.
And then just cycles through like that for the entire 18 holes.
Exactly.
So, Jamie, after the show, we're actually going to be heading out to Bell Acres to play 18. So how's the course looking right now? I know it's been open for about 2 months now. And are those greens fast or slow? Because I'm going to need all the help I can get on those greens.
I just played 9 holes this morning. It's in absolute fantastic shape. But you need to bring your sweater today.
It's a little bit chilly out there.
Oh, it's really windy.
Okay, well, as he's known as playing, he's used to playing links golf, so he'll be able to keep the ball under the wind as he hits his ground ball after ground ball. He doesn't like to get a lot of height off the tee there.
I don't like to do a lot of moving. That's why the golf cart is really going to come in handy there. I don't like to sweat too much.
No, yes, I understand that sentiment completely. Jamie Chapman joins us. He's the head director of golf operations at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, talking about the upcoming Bell Acres Pro-Am presented by Illegal Curve. Now, of course, it's a competition for the pros, and it's going to be a fun afternoon coming up on July the 8th. But, after the round, there's some real special things happening. Live bands, food and drink. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, but what people can – what's their reward for finishing 18 holes of difficult golf?
Absolutely. So more importantly, it's just coming out and enjoying the festivities. We're just going to have a lot of fun from start to finish. It's going to carry on into the evening. It's a Friday. It's going to be a great day. And then the night's going to be even better than the golf experience, I think.
And Jamie, for those golfers out there who are interested in signing up for the Bell Acres Pro-Am, is the best thing to do to go to the Bell Acres website, or is it to contact you directly?
Best thing to do is to call 632-8337, call the pro shop. They'll help you. Ask for me or ask for Jimmy, my assistant golf professional, and or else email me at jameschapman@bellacres.com. and we'll get you signed up immediately.
Absolutely. So that's how you find the information about the upcoming 2016 Bell Acres Pro-Am. Jamie Chapman, Director of Golf Operations at Bell Acres, thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Pro-Am. We're looking forward to a great afternoon coming up on the 8th of July, 1:30 p.m. tee off with a shotgun start for the 2016 Bell Acres Pro-Am. Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks, guys. See you in a couple hours.
See you in a couple hours. Exactly right. As he's going to hit the links after the show today, I'm going to go home and spend some quality time with the family, of course.
Well, you're going to take your dad nap.
I'm going to take my dad. I don't get a dad nap. There's no such thing as a dad nap.
By the way, Drew, I was...
When you have an eight-month-old, there's no dad nap.
I've been meaning to ask you this question.
Okay.
I already knew that you were a powerhouse, but is it true, like, do you have dad strength now? Like, you hear about, like, when you become a dad, you get dad strength.
I haven't, Aaron's still a little too young to really have to demonstrate dad strength on, but, you know, I think you do almost develop dad strength simply because, you know, you're walking around all day holding this, you know, 15, 20-pound kid. It's like, you know, walk around holding a 15-pound weight all day, you can't help but sort of get stronger by default.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
I have been eating more also, so that helps matters a lot.
That's a given. You do enjoy
a good fresh every now and then. Yeah, exactly.
But I was going to say your buys and tries are looking bigger than ever.
I'm looking ripped. Yeah, I understand that. Thank you there, Ezzy. That's it for this Saturday morning and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. A big thank you to our guest, Al Strachan, joined us to talk about Gordie Howe. A fantastic interview. Mark Seidel joined us from the North American Central Scouting Service to talk about the NHL Draft. And, of course, Grant Saunier joined us to talk about the QMJHL draft-eligible prospects. In case you missed any of that, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Our Twitter, you can follow us there, @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Corey, doing a great job behind the board today. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.